Greetings from the Audible Local Ledger, located in beautiful Mashpee, Massachusetts, and serving the Cape, the Islands, and the South Coast. The Ledger delivers information and entertainment to the print and paper from our Cape-based volunteer readers, as well as from other services around the state, such as the Talking Information Center in Marshfield and the Audio Journal in Worcester. You may sometimes hear their content, but it's the Cape's very own Audible Local Ledger that's broadcasting it. My name's Alex, and I'll be reading you selections from the e-edition of the Taunton Gazette, dated February 26, 2020. Let's begin with the local 5-day forecast. Today, cloudy, mist, and cooler. 44 to 51 high, 37 to 44 low. Thursday, rain early in the morning, 46 to 53 high, 24 to 31 low. Friday, partly sunny and colder, 35 to 42 high, 22 to 29 low. Saturday, mostly sunny, 33 to 40 high, 18 to 25 low. Sunday, plenty of sunshine, 33 to 40 high, and 15 to 22 low. And now for the lotteries, Monday's drawings. Mass midday, 5230. Mass cash, 2412-1419. Mass evening, 9365. Lucky for life, 23, 27, 33, 44, 48. Lucky ball, 11. Rhode Island numbers, midday, 6363. Evening, 3754. Trucking is deadly for truckers and others. Justin Fox. One of the major industries for which the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported workplace fatality rates for 2018, truck transportation was the most dangerous, with 28 deaths per 100,000 full-time equivalent workers. To be sure, there were jobs more dangerous than driving a truck. Dig down a bit deeper into the BLS data, which were released in December, and one finds fatality rate estimates of 67.5 per 100,000 full-time equivalent workers for fishing, hunting, and trapping, and 64 for logging. Both are part of the larger agriculture, forestry, fishing, and hunting category in the chart above, albeit with double-digit margins of error because the number of workers involved is so small. The agency also reports fatalities by occupation, thus counting truck drivers who don't happen to work for trucking companies, while separating out the people who work in the logging company office from the ones actually cutting down trees. The latter job is seriously dangerous, with 97.5 occupational fatalities for logging workers per 100,000 full-time equivalent workers in 2018, give or take an error margin of 26.8. The other highest risk occupations were fishers and related fishing workers at 77.4, plus or minus 23.9, aircraft pilots and flight engineers at 58.9, 12.4, roofers at 51.5, 8.4, refuse and recyclable material collectors at 44.3, 10.2, and driver or sales workers and truck drivers at 26.0.9. So, Deadliest Catch is not an inaccurately titled TV series. Cutting down big trees and climbing up on roofs are as dangerous as they look. Flying in small aircraft, non-commercial flights were responsible for 97% of aircraft-related fatalities in 2018. Maybe more dangerous than it looks, and you should be nice to your garbage men. But trucking is of an entirely different scale than any of those industries or occupations. There are about 1.5 million people working in the truck transportation industry, and 3.6 million driver, sales workers, and truck drivers, of whom 1.8 million drive heavy-duty tractor-trailer trucks. Drivers or sales workers and truck drivers account for 2.3% of the workforce and 18.4% of occupational fatalities. Also, trucking is not just dangerous for the truck drivers. In fact, about 80% of the fatalities and road accidents involving heavy trucks in recent years have been people not in the trucks. Clearly, what we need to do is ban trucking. Think of all the lives that would be saved. Think of all the things that wouldn't be delivered either. The U.S. economy would grind to a halt without trucks. Also, trucking-related fatalities are down 36% since 1980, even as the annual miles traveled by large trucks almost tripled. Large truck-related fatalities do not make up a larger share of overall traffic fatalities than large trucks do of the vehicle miles traveled. But the disparity isn't huge, 10.8% versus 9.2% since 2010. And small vehicle drivers are probably responsible for more of the fatal accidents in the above chart than the truck drivers are. At least, they're much likelier to have elevated blood alcohol levels and past license suspensions or revocations. Still, the occupational fatality data are a useful reminder that moving things around in big trucks remains more dangerous than anything else that large numbers of people in the U.S. regularly do. Consider the 2018 fatality rates for other transportation industries. Air transportation's low fatality rate might seem a head-scratcher, given how dangerous it is to be a pilot. But again, that's the difference between super-safe commercial aviation, which employs the vast majority of people in the industry and flies the vast majority of the passengers, and riskier general aviation. It looks like a canal-based freight transportation system like that of the 17th century Netherlands would be much safer than a truck-based one. But we don't really have the canals for that here in the U.S., and they've even filled in a lot of them in the Netherlands. We also don't have a nationwide system of pneumatic tubes for moving stuff around, even though that would be awesome. We do, however, have perhaps the world's best freight rail network, which in has recent years rivaled trucking in ton miles of freight carried, although it's still way behind on a dollar value basis. Trains, like trucks, are generally much more dangerous to those outside of them than those inside. In 2018, according to the Federal Railroad Administration, 795 people died from being hit by trains at grade crossings or while trespassing on tracks, and an additional 266 committed suicide by jumping in front of trains, but that still adds up to only about a quarter as many people as were killed in accidents involving large trucks. Railroads have been pitching customers for a while with the argument that moving freight by rail is more environmentally friendly than doing it by truck. Maybe they ought to add that it kills fewer people, too. In 2015, the Congressional Budget Office did factor in accident risk, along with pavement damage, traffic congestion, and emissions. In an evaluation of the external costs imposed by trucking, which it estimated at 8 times higher on a ton-mile basis than those imposed by freight rail, taxes paid by the trucking industry come nowhere near covering those costs, meaning that trucking is effectively subsidized by current transportation and tax policy to the tune of tens of billions of dollars a year. This seems counterproductive. Still, there are lots of places tracks can get to that trains can't. They cover the crucial last mile, and lots of miles in between. They remain indispensable. So how can they be made safer for their drivers and everyone else? One possible solution that's gotten an awful lot of attention in recent years is self-driving technology. Autonomous trucks could be much safer than trucks driven by error-prone humans, although to get the full safety benefits all, the other vehicles on the road will have to be self-driving too. I suspect that something along these lines is in our future, but that future seems further away than it did a couple years ago. Plus, I sympathize with the millions of truck drivers who would rather have a job with somewhat elevated fatality risk than no job at all. The biggest issue may be that U.S. roads in general are much more dangerous than they need to be. With the fatal accidents per vehicle rate now significantly higher here than in other rich countries. One explanation for this disparity is differences in urban and road design. Another is that U.S. speed limit, seatbelt, and drunken driving laws are both more permissive than those of most other rich countries and much less strictly enforced and observed. Hey, we value our freedom. I wonder if we might be overvaluing the freedom to die in a truck accident, though. Bruins swap Heinen for Ritchie by Mark Loftus. Boston. Friday's trade made them faster. Monday's trade made them bigger. The Bruins already sit atop the NHL's overall standings, so it will be hard for them to actually get better over the last 19 games of the regular season. But that wasn't the point of adding wingers Andre Case and Nick Ritchie ahead of Monday's NHL trade deadline. We've maintained our depth and addressed some areas we felt we needed, General Manager Don Sweeney said on Monday afternoon after executing his second trade with the Ducks in 4 days. Andre Case was acquired on Friday in exchange for unused veteran David Backes, defense prospect Axel Anderson, and the Bruins' first-round draft pick this summer. Winger Danton Heinen was sent to Anaheim on Monday for Nick Ritchie. Secondary scoring is also always so important, and we believe Case will provide some of that, with a speed element to his game and now Ritchie on the other side. If he goes and plays with Charlie Coyle, those are two big guys to contain. The Bruins may get a look at a Ritchie Coyle combination on Tuesday night against the Flames at TD Garden, but Case's may be delayed slightly, out of action since February 7th with what the Ducks termed flu-like symptoms. He did practice with the Bees on Monday morning, but head coach Bruce Cassidy said he thought Case would like to get a few more reps with us before playing a game. But that deal is as much for the playoffs and moving forward, Cassidy added. Bill would make it easier for homeless to get state ID card. A bill scheduled for debate by the Massachusetts Senate this week would make it easier for the homeless to obtain state identification cards. The bill would require the registrar of motor vehicles to come up with what supporters call a burden-free process for homeless individuals to obtain the IDs. That process would be free of fees and would accept alternative forms of documentation to prove Massachusetts residency, including information from homeless service providers or other state agencies. The specific kind of documentation would be left up to the registrar. The bill, sponsored by Senate Harriet Chandler, is scheduled to be debated by the Senate on Thursday. The Worcester Democrats said IDs are essential for everything from opening a bank account and applying for a job to getting into stable housing and interacting with police. Chandler said under current law, gathering the necessary documents and coming up with a fee can be insurmountable barriers for some people, particularly the homeless. We are approaching the midway point in our broadcast, which is the time to list today's obituaries. The first and only obituary of today is of June E. Douglas of Cicero, New York, who passed away peacefully at 80 years old on February 19, 2020, surrounded by her family. June was born in Taunton, Massachusetts. When she met her future husband, she moved to Cicero, New York. She was the beloved wife of Lincoln G. Douglas Jr. for 51 years and loving mother of Lincoln G. Douglas III, Liz Wirtz, and Elizabeth E. Douglas. She was the daughter of the late Seth and Dorothy Rose Borges and sister of Seth Richard Pauline Borges, Helen Borges Hatchett, and Frances Borges Harris. She loved flowers, gardening, baking, art, making crafts, music, dance, and the elusive hummingbird. She proudly cheered on the Syracuse University basketball team, traveling both domestically and internationally, was something she enjoyed, as well as long motorcycle trips with her husband. Visitation services will be held Saturday, February 29th, at Ferguson Funeral Home, North Syracuse, New York. Donations may be made to Hospice of CNY, 990 7th North Street, Liverpool, New York, 13088. Unknown No More. Mitchell Eyes Defending Honda Classic Win by Tim Reynolds. Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. They know who Keith Mitchell is now at PGA National. That's progress. It was much different a year ago at the Honda Classic, on a leaderboard where Brooks Kopeka and Ricky Fowler were closest to Mitchell and were past major champions like Vijay Singh, Sergio Garcia, Jim Furyk, and Lucas Glover were hovering not far from the top. It was the relative unknown who emerged as the winner. The Honda was Mitchell's first career win, a breakthrough moment for the now 28-year-old from Chattanooga, Tennessee. And he's back at PGA National this week, now with people shouting his name as he walks by with hopes of defending the title. The crazy part is, you know, a couple of years ago, I didn't have a PGA Tour card, and now I'm playing at the Masters against the best players in the world, Mitchell said. I mean, yes, it's what your dream, what your goal is, but it means you just have to work that much harder and do that much more. He has kept a sense of perspective and a sense of humor. As he walked up the 18th fairway in the final round a year ago, at that moment tied for the lead with Kopeka at 8 under, the NBC broadcast referred to him as Kevin Mitchell, the Palm Beach Post. The newspaper based closest to PGA National ran "No Name Champion" as its banner headline the day after the Honda. Mitchell had the good sense to understand that the paper meant no disrespect. Besides, he pointed out the $1,224,000 winner's check, which he clinched with a birdie at the par 5 finishing hole, a putt that left him one shot clear of Kopeka and Fowler, was made out to the right name. The motivation is simply the excitement, adrenaline, the hard work and effort that you've put in your entire life, Mitchell said. I started playing golf as a hobby. I started playing it because my best friend at the time, his dad was the head pro at the local golf course, and that's how I started playing golf. Just simply out of enjoyment and love for the game, I just kept playing and enjoying it. I played in college and then I turned pro because I thought I might have a chance to be good enough. Cutbacks by ancestry. 23andMe signaled turmoil for DNA industry. Kristen V. Brown, Bloomberg. Consumer DNA testing firms are closing up shop and cutting jobs as a lull in sales forces in the industry to move beyond the genealogy tests that turned a handful of well-funded companies into household names. At least three companies have closed down or suspended their operations over the past year, while the two DNA testing bellwethers, Ancestry and 23andMe, each cut about 100 jobs in recent weeks. Others have pulled tests from the market thanks to slow sales. A seemingly insatiable appetite for discovering the secrets of the human genome made home testing kits runaway hits. Ancestry gained more than 10 million users between 2017 and 2019, after growing to just 5 million in the five previous years combined. Rival 23andMe saw its sales quintuple in 2 years, from 2 million customers in 2017 to more than 10 million last year. Those gains represent a near-term peak for an industry that attracted billions of dollars in private investment and spent lavishly on marketing and advertising. The biggest players are now retrenching as they try to deliver on a long-promised personalized health revolution, while those not big or well-funded enough to endure the slowdown are struggling. Genetics are not as mainstream as people would like to believe that they are, said Clayton Lewis, who co-founded and was the chief executive officer of Aravail, a wellness testing company that he said raised more than $55 million from investors including Arch Venture Partners, but closed in April due to sluggish sales. Aravail, founded in 2014, provided people with genetic insights into diet and other issues, and was a partner in a DNA app store envisioned by Helix, a company backed by genome sequencing giant Illumina. I built a company for a few of my friends, not the masses, Lewis said. People loved the idea, but then they wouldn't go home and sign up. All of us that were pioneers thinking consumers were going to be interested. we have universally fail. Our veil's closure reflects a wider shift in the consumer DNA testing industry, while early adopters in genealogy enthusiasts, looking to fill out their family tree rush to take the test. Concern about what happens to their most intimate personal information has kept other potential customers from dropping a few $100 on the screening. One of the most important things right now is to win back customers' trust. 23andMe CEO Ann Wojcicki said in an interview, citing privacy as the main issue cutting into company sales. Last month, 23andMe said it cut 14% of its jobs. While helping people interested in connecting with relatives, the tests provided little useful information about personal health. When 23andMe launched its test in 2007, the aim was to reveal genetic predispositions to dozens of diseases and traits. But for most people, the tests have changed little. Family history remains a better predictor of disease risk than genetics for most, and deciding what to do about troubling is often confusing. I don't think there are yet any interesting use cases for the medical side of consumer genomics. Telling people they have a 3% increased risk for Alzheimer's disease isn't changing anyone's life, said Brian Roberts, an investor with the venture capital firm Venrock. Until we have a much better handle on disease susceptibility, it just seems like there isn't a very big market there. A lack of value for customers is what led Everly Well, an at-home lab testing company that last April raised $50 million to stop selling its DNA testing product in December. The company had developed three tests, including one for sensitivity, in collaboration with Helix, but CEO Julia Cheeks said it accounted for less than 2% of its monthly sales. Consumers just don't know what to do with it, said Cheek. The DNA testing space, she said, is overcrowded and consumers still primarily view tests as novelty. It's less about privacy issues and more based on people, not just seeing value, she said. Others have hit similar bumps. Venome, a test on the Helix platform that matched people with a wine that might like based on their genetics, and on its website in January that it was taking a break. Mirza Sifrik, CEO of Veritas Genetics, which temporarily shut down in December after running out of funding, said it is stressing that its test offers real clinical utility as it relaunches. Veritas offers whole genome sequencing for $599. There is definitely a correction in the growth that we saw, he said. If you're not solving somebody's problem, it's hard to get them to spend money instead of spending money on something else. All of us that were pioneers, thinking consumers were going to be interested, we have universally failed. Bigger companies have also shifted away from the consumer market. Helix, which launched in 2015 with $100 million from Illumina, had planned to sell tests directly through a DNA app store. In April, the company changed course, shifting instead to partnerships with healthcare providers, finding it was hard to sell people on health information without healthcare provider. The killer app in consumer genetics was genealogy. That's totally clear, said Justin Cowell, co-founder and senior vice president of business development and partnerships of Helix. In January 2019, Colored Genomics made a similar move. One of the things that's become clear over time is that the utility of genetics is really as a clinical service, said Colored CEO Othman Laraki. If you're competing for entertainment value, you're competing against things like mobile games and Netflix that are cheaper, Laraki said. While people are used to paying for gym memberships or weight loss products, they're not accustomed to paying out of pocket to learn about disease risk. If genetics testing is a healthcare product, he said, it needs to be part of the healthcare system. Getting consumers to pay for tests is not an effective business model, he said. Color raised an additional $75 million in funding last month. Wojcicki, the 23andMe CEO, said she views the decline as temporary. The company recently posted a slew of job openings in its growing therapeutics division, a sign that is placing increased focus on turning its trove of DNA data into new therapies. Last month, it licensed a drug it developed in-house to another company for the first time, the Spanish pharmaceutical company Almirall. It also has a deal to collaborate on drug development with GlaxoSmithKline, which took a $300 million stake in the company in 2018. Ancestry also recently launched a health test, emphasizing that it hopes to bridge the gap between consumer tests and the doctor's office. Our focus going forward is centered on creating an ongoing relationship with consumers to bring them the most comprehensive, personalized preventative health screens, the company said in a statement. The basic challenge of direct customers is too expensive, said Jeff Bird, a managing director of Sutter Hill Ventures, who helped launch Helix. Once you're in the market, you don't realize how little people are willing to pay. Mass Auditor seeks $600,000 to address rapid staff turnover by Katie Lannon, State House News Service. Auditor Suzanne Bump asked legislative budget writers for an extra $600,000 next year, particularly to help cope with the much more rapid turnover her office is experiencing. Frankly, the recent rate of attrition in our office, as we are providing training programs for our staff, introducing them to data analytics, it means that they have many more opportunities in the private sector, Bump told members of the House of Senate Ways and Means Committees at a hearing at Roxbury Community College. Bump said that in seeking an increase of $606,253 over this year's appropriation of roughly $20 million. She's asking for what's essentially a maintenance budget that sustains current staff and training levels and supports rent increases in two of four regional offices. She told the committee she was urgently asking them to support a funding boost that will allow her office to retain its current workforce. We need to try to be competitive with the private sector, Bump said. It's a challenge. Governor Charlie Baker recommended funding Bump's office at about $20.43 million, an increase of $360,485 over this year's budget. Bump also previewed some of the topics her office will dive into over the next year. She said she plans to release reports and audits that examine environmental water quality, identify opportunities for mass health savings and efficiencies, and to continue to strengthen our state's system for caring for our citizens. I've reached the end of our reading for today. If you know someone who could use our service or you're interested in volunteering and donating to our nonprofit organization to keep us on the air, it's tax deductible. Please call 508-539-2030 or visit our website, audiblelocalledger.org. You can now listen to us on Alexa-powered speakers like the Amazon Echo Dot. Just say these exact words: Alexa, play radio station Audible Local Ledger on TuneIn, and you'll have a clear static-free connection to our readings. As always, thank you for your continued support. Bye for now.